The show that doesn't grab them by the but does occasionally kick them in the It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome back. We took a little bit of a break as our studio took a little bit of a breaking, but we're back. And we're available on even more places. This week, we're starting up on the iHeart app, as well as Spotify, iTunes, and of course, fine radio stations across the country. Oh, and we have so much to cover today. Everything from Rudy Giuliani, not news about him and his cousin marrying ways, but instead him trying to cousin up to the Ukrainian diplomats and their reaction to it. We'll also talk about abortion and Donald Trump, and who's we? Well, first, there's me. I'm your host, critical thinker, problem solver, guy just left of normal and sane. My name is Shaggy Jenkins. Today, joining me from West Texas, where per capita they have more guns than sense, please welcome Drew Landry.
Hey, good to be back. What's up, everybody?
I know, we took a little bit of a break while we were trying to recover from, and I mean this in the nicest way possible, this job tortures me emotionally and mentally, and I just needed 1 week of not talking about it. Does that make me a bad person?
No, I was about the same way, to be honest. So it was pretty daggone depressing. So, but I'm back. I'm recharged just like you are. So let's dig in.
So let's jump into our first light topic of the day, abortion. Gosh, that is seriously the lightest topic that we'll cover today. But during our break, Alabama, and of course we once again heard reiterations from Georgia and Ohio. Then there was Missouri that jumped into the fray. Here lately, Drew, a lot of states are starting to attack the uterus, or at least the uterus's rights.
Yeah.
Let's start with Georgia's abortion law. I want to bring up just right at the beginning the most interesting facet of it, and I want your reaction as a person that one time wanted to serve in public office. Knowing that your dreams were crushed as soon as that you saw the latest pool of politicians this year, is it any surprise to you that lawmakers in Georgia are basically, and I mean this in the nicest way, kind of ebbing back towards people as property with their abortion law?
Yeah, it's really depressing to see what's happening, not just in Georgia, but in Louisiana, and it's in Kentucky and Missouri. It's here we go again. You know, this is what happens when people don't vote, and then they vote on other types of issues, and then abortion gets swept right in here. But here's what we have to remember is that, you know, this all stems from Roe v. Wade, the landmark 73 Supreme Court case that gave states certain abilities to legislate this particular issue. Now, this, you know, from 73 on to now, there's been many different cases that has tried to rather tailor this particular case to where there are limits to it. And the latest one taking place about 27 years ago in the early 90s called Planned Parenthood versus Casey, where it says that you can legislate it, but you can't bring about an undue burden upon the woman. Now, what does that mean? Well, who knows? Well, here's what a lot of lawmakers have done. They're doing everything that they can to try to do to undo Roe. All right, they want some sort of a particular state law that will take it to the U.S. Supreme Court and will overturn Roe v. Wade, and therefore state that abortions can't be done in any type or have any type of federal protection over this particular action. But what is ever so happening, and this is why you're seeing this in state after state after state that are ran by Republicans and conservative state legislatures, they are constantly trying to repeal back a lot of the protections made by the federal government and the U.S. Supreme Court. So a lot of things are in play here. You have state legislatures, which are elections that no one really pays attention to. And then you have the U.S. Supreme Court, which are appointed, these justices are appointed by the U.S. president, which really motivated a lot of people to vote for Trump in 2016. And he's really had his way to put in pro-life, pro-rather extreme life justices, not just on the Supreme Court, but in other federal things. So very long-winded answer to this question here. So this is what I'm going to try to boil it down to. States passing extreme laws on abortion, restricting a woman's right to choose on this issue, and then letting that be challenged to the U.S. Supreme Court that has a majority of pro-life judges in an attempt to overturn Roe v. Wade.
Now, that's just it, too, because when it came to the Alabama and Georgia laws, they have specifically been addressed publicly as, we are doing this as a direct 180 from Roe v. Wade because we want a higher court to pick this up. As a matter of fact, when they signed the law when they signed the Alabama Act, the governor herself even was quoted as saying, we know this isn't going to stick, but we want it to go in front of the Supreme Court. Here's the thing about this, though, Drew. Could that strategy actually backfire on these ultra-harsh conservative states?
Yes, it can. Poll after poll after poll has been taken on this issue for a very long time. And what you'll find, and whether it's Gallup, whether it's Pew Research, whether it's any type of other poll that's out there, you will find a majority of Americans are in favor of upholding Roe v. Wade. And let alone the fact that you'll find even a majority of people who identify as being pro-life say that there should be restrictions, I'm sorry, not restrictions, that there should be exceptions to the abortion laws, such as rape and incest or the life of the mother is in danger. So what these laws are doing is they are saying you can't have an abortion after 8 weeks and not a lot of exceptions for that. And you're like, well, okay, this is really tough because, you know, there's a whole host of reasons that women are going to have to what I'm getting at is that this is really going to challenge a lot of the ongoing thinking when it comes to even Republicans and conservatives who in the majority say that exceptions should be made. And what else needs to be stated here is that when Pat Robertson, who is on the 700 Club, says the Alabama law was too extreme, you know something's up. So, you know, this is ever so mind-boggling, but you said it, but you hit the nail right on the head, is that they're trying to do what they can to get this up onto the Supreme Court so that they can challenge this and try and do more what they can to eventually overturn the 73 decision.
Now, this is the thing about that strategy, though, because, Drew, I don't think it's going to work. The reason I say that I don't think it's going to work is for a very, very, very simple reason, is their strategy is trying to legislate through the judicial branch, which basically means that all of this stuff at the end of the day could be undone should the legislative branch actually take up these calls.
And
Donald Trump's strategy, de facto strategy, in fact, has been introduce legislation that challenges something so that it goes to his highly stacked judiciary branch and he eventually gets his way through the conservative judges that he knows. But this is why I really want to kind of hone in on this one part. That strategy is actually upsetting and inflaming a lot of moderate GOPs who are saying, this is not how we legislate. This is how you litigate a government. Is there going to be some sort of big divide where these guys come back and say, you know what, this isn't the way we govern?
Yeah, that's always a thing. That's always an issue. You know, when does the party in power overreach? And you can see that whenever you are in the supermajority or even have a slight majority and you feel that, you know, now's the time to go after Roe or now's the time to really, you know, hone in on abortion laws, that you find that you go a bridge too far. And then you get whipped back into shape through the election process. And this is something that Democrats are really going to hone in on in the next election, not just in down ballot races, say for governor or for Congress or for state rep, but also even at the presidency. I don't think there's any question that Trump is going to be the Republican nominee, but I think you'll have whoever the Democratic nominee is. This is going to be a key issue. It really hasn't been in the past few elections for president. And there was kind of like this sense of like a truce that, you know, we're not really going to divide the country over this issue and we're just going to deal with other issues and things like that. That's now off the table. The truce is gone. Republicans in their conservative states are trying to legislate what they would litigate. And Democrats are going to pounce on this and say, look, this isn't just about where life begins or any of this stuff. This is a healthcare issue, and these types of laws that these Republicans are wanting to bring out are forced carry to term laws that can actually kill women. And so this is what it's, you have an interesting labeling here, an interesting narrative of what the right and the left will do. But when most people are in favor of Roe v. Wade, and when most people are even, in favor of exceptions to abortions, and you are a state that you go further than that, that's an issue. And that's going to be something that that will probably bring out more women out to vote. And more women are pro-choice than men. And so whenever they let their voices be heard, it will be loud, and they will feel the repercussions of what their overreach was.
Now, that's kind of one of an interesting point, because when it comes to women and moderate women right now, a lot of pro-life moderate women who were surveyed basically said, look, the institution of abortion may be something that I disagree with for moral reasons. However, I am a woman. I have woman parts. I know that there is literally hundreds of thousands of things that can come up in a pregnancy that can cause either terrible kind of a life for whatever survives and comes to term, or could kill the mother and child in the process. Or just kill the mother and leave the child an orphan because, single parents and things like that. The fact of the matter is that even moderate women, when they look at all of the variables around the issue of abortion, they see it more as an institution of women's health. And looking at it through that guy, Drew, how likely are moderate women to come out to the next polls? Because even though, once again, they're pro-life and they have moral objections to the institution of abortion, still understand that it's a universal right that women should have access to. How likely are they to come out?
That's a great question. Excuse me. A lot of things can happen in the next year and a half that can spur a big moment in voter turnout, whether for men or for women or Democrats, Republicans, independents, whatever. As of right now, you're seeing a lot of women saying, wait a minute, no one knows more about a uterus than a woman. And when a legislature full of men want to start to do that, they get really upset. Oddly enough, so I mean, if just think about it for a second, if a legislature full of women said that men have to have a vasectomy by the age of 27, I think men would probably be upset by that. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to tell women that you can't have an abortion after 8 weeks, that's going to cause a big uprise. Now, you asked me about the election and what kind of turnout that this could really spur. Yeah. The thing about it is that we have to, this flame has to keep going. The Democrats have to keep pushing it in a sensible way. And so they have to keep the narrative going, because we forget things. We forget an awful lot. So if this is part of the healthcare narrative, this is something that women can really turn around and say, yeah, this is a healthcare issue. This is a medical procedure not so much of killing and all this stuff. You know, they, you know, one of the biggest narratives that's being put out there right now is by the right saying, well, you know, you can get an abortion on the very day that you're about to have the go into labor. And that's what the Democrats want to do. They want to rip the babies right out of the womb. Well, the thing is that that only happens incredibly rare. And that's only about 1%. And the fact that it's a life or death situation, that's killing a woman. So these types of things don't happen they're ever so rare, according to the statistics that are out there. So with the narrative saying that, no, what really it comes down to is medical procedures and women's health, and not trying to, you know, force women to carry to full term when you know that they'll die, I think that's something that women can probably get around and say that. Who can make somebody grosser, you know?
Yeah, this is the thing, though, because when we talk about that, okay, let's imagine here for a second, because I want to give you an example of the inverse here that you just brought up. I was sure. Literally going to cut you off, but then I was like, no, I'll just wait for Drew to cut himself off. Here's the thing. Okay, let's suppose real quick that scientifically speaking, ready? Because this is all actually proven. Science actually came out a week ago and says, hey, guys, you know, as long as we're talking about viability and stuff, right? Let's talk about your little swimmers. Okay, your sperm actually start to degrade exponentially after the age of 40. In other words, if you do want to have a child, you have to, as a man, for the best viable sperm that you can, have to have that child before 40. Now, after 40, the chances of children being born with mental deficiencies, mental illness such as depression and things like that, lifetime conditions such as autism, CP, and others that are genetic, those things are more likely with a guy past the age of 40 conceiving a child. With that said, let's say that a panel of women elected officials came forward and said that all men had to have a vasectomy before the age of 40 because, in the interest of the sanctity of life, we need men to have more viable sperm. Yeah. What would your reaction be to that panel telling you that decision?
I think I would stand up and give a standing ovation and say, you know what? Yes, thank you for finally doing this, because I wouldn't be very happy about it, truth be told, but I'd say, you know what? You've been told what to do in this country by men who are in power since the inception of this country. And now you have the opportunity to turn around, and you did exactly that. Good for you. And that would be my initial response. And then I'd probably sober up and go, but
my body, my choice sounds like a very familiar mantra that you might have.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
You see, this is the part that really, and I'm just going to use that word that I try to avoid using on the show. This is the actual part about American men that pisses me off.
Mm-hmm.
They do not understand that the things that we do to women through legislation, were the tables turned, they would not like it at all.
That's right.
And having that kind of a mindset of, well, I wouldn't want it done to me with this vasectomy council and committee. I wouldn't want it done to me. Then think about it. That's what we are doing to women in this country day after day after day, including with the latest batch of laws. If a woman leaves the state to get an abortion, she can actually be found accountable for a felony upon the return to her home state. In other words, Drew, now we're starting to own parts of women. Your uterus is now public domain.
Yeah.
Now, how would you feel about your penis being like that, huh?
I think there's so many jokes I could tell you, but I'm bad at telling jokes, and I'm not going to. I would feel pretty terrible. That would be awful. I mean, that's exactly how everybody should feel. I mean, if you're going to legislate, I mean, the point of legislatures and Congress is to solve problems and be part of an on. I mean, that's one of the many functions that they have. You try not to create more problems by trying to solve them. And in this issue right here, that has been ever so divided for the past 46 years, any particular step too far to the right or too far to the left immediately causes a whole host of groaning and political division. So what I'm getting at is this. This isn't really an issue that really should be decided by legislatures. This is an issue that should be decided in a medical room with doctors who understand science and give the best possible advice out there known to man when it comes to all of these things. I mean, this is a decision between a woman and her doctor. That's really what it comes down to. That's what it should be. And that's in the ideal world, that's how it should work. But what we're finding here is, how do you score the best political points? How do you rouse up your base for an election? You feed them a red meat. You keep the tigers and all the animals as hungry as possible, and then you throw them something to get them excited, and now they're going to vote for you. Well, you know, where was the abortion issue in 2017 or in 2015 in a lot of these states? They weren't really around. And now here they are in 2019, and everyone's getting excited. And so we'll see how far that excitement goes for 2020. But, you know, in the world of Donald Trump, nothing really seems to stay quiet for a while.
Glad you brought that name up, because here's the last bit of this discussion I want to have. Look, because of Donald Trump and his sterling reputation as commander-in-chief lately, we have, by and large, not had on the GOP side a good central party platform to run under. I mean, we can run as an obstructionist party. Hey, they're the Democrats. Screw them. Or you can run as basically saying, look how much rights we're taking away from women right now. That's not a good sign. And that's why some GOP are trying to distance themselves from the Alabama, Georgia, Ohio, and Missouri decision. But here's the thing. When you actually toss it out there as saying, you know what, this is a sanctity of life movement, all of a sudden you can bypass Trump, you can bypass the Russian investigation, you can bypass the dirty money, the terrible politicians, Cohen's testimony, and have a centralized platform for the GOP to rally around. Do you think this is their 2020 strategy?
That's yes. Yes, it is. This is their 2020 strategy. And I think it go even more if Democrats play in the hand and try to impeach him, because I think he wants to be impeached. So he can say, look, they're trying to get rid of me. They don't like 2016. So reelect me and we'll be vindicated. This is definitely part of it. And he's wheeling it out.
That's just it. Because, Drew, when I think about when I think about all of these laws that are coming out here in a subtle sort of way, the United States versus the rest of the world is saying that women have not yet reached first tier society right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, for people that don't understand, first tier society right is currently what white males enjoy. In other words, it's all of the benefits and consequences of the law as written and interpreted. Women do not have that. Instead, we have a second set of laws for them. Minorities, well, they have a third set of laws on it. And then if you're a woman who's also a minority, you have a fourth set of laws. Now, if you are a minority and you identify as LGBTQ, guess what? Boom, you are in fifth tier society. Now, when I talk about these tiers, a lot of people don't understand that they exist and they're reinforced by measures like this. Will we ever get to a point in the United States where we're all first tier right?
Yeah. I don't think so. And if we are, I don't think we'll be here to really see it. We're having too many of these, of these laws being passed saying that people can't use a bathroom here. or you have to be of a certain sex to have a procedure done, and there's laws of really saying that abortions are illegal and all. And it's too many of you and me, and by you and me, Shaggy, I mean white guys, are in charge. And we are rather, in a way, threatened by anybody else coming and taking our power. So how do you do? So how do you stop them from doing that? Not by convincing people to vote for you. No, you rig the game, and you make it harder for other people to defeat you in many elections. And you try to suppress other people's voices. And this is how, this is what has been done now for hundreds of years in our country. But I just want to make just one last point here, is that you mentioned the term sanctity of life. That is a term that has been around for a while, and especially with the whole criminal activity known as eugenics. And this was big, and very, very popular until the Nazis, decided that they wanted to use it too. And then, boom, it was gone, from American even nomenclature and any other type of lexicon. But what we're talking about here is, you can't let disabled people reproduce, can't let the unsmart people reproduce.
Yeah.
Can't let older people reproduce. Can't let women get a medical procedure done. All for the sanctity of life. What an encompassing, incredibly gross argument and old that should be shot down, and this should be part of the narrative.
Yeah, it should. And coming back, we'll talk more about that narrative up next. This is Shaggy Jenkins Show.
Warning. Too much consumption of the Shaggy Jenkins Show could result in a higher IQ, a better understanding of the world, and not being called a f***ing idiot as much. It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome back. Hey, if you missed any part of our show, guess what? This week you can pick us up on the iHeartMedia app as well as Spotify, iTunes, we're just everywhere, and we're on all of these radio stations. As a matter of fact, if we're not on a radio station in your town, you should probably call up your nearest Pacific affiliate or independent community station and ask them, what is wrong with you? Joining me through my trip through insanity is, from West Texas, a guy that has to teach class as well as exude it. Please welcome Drew Landry.
Hey, I'm happy to ride shotgun with you, Shaggy.
Yeah, I'm telling you, and today we might need a couple of shotguns for this next story. Can we just start off this next segment with the statement, Rudy Giuliani has not been the most prime example of a good diplomat?
that's a good start.
Okay. Because as such, Rudy Giuliani a couple of weeks ago says, hey, you know what? I got some Ukrainian friends. I'm going to go visit them. I don't know why I'm giving him a Brooklyn accent.
Let's just, why not?
Yeah. Hey, Rudy Giuliani is up in front of the camera. Hey, bada bing, bada boom, I went to the Ukrainians. Now I've made him Rodney Dangerfield. Okay, look.
I get no respect, huh? Yeah.
The man that does not get no respect and does not understand contouring in drag, Rudy Giuliani, definitely has a problem with his latest escapade. As such, those escapades involve going to the Ukrainian government and saying, hey, buddies, pal, can you do me a favor and tell us exactly how the United States is attacking our president through using Russia's things? Did I describe that right? It's such a blurry thing that he wanted.
It was so bizarre. Yeah. And he just put his foot in his mouth. And we have to kind of back up and just kind of unravel what brought us to this particular story, is that he goes and says, hey, look, I'm going to go to the Ukraine and get dirt on Joe Biden. And, I don't know what more dirt you need on Joe Biden than a Google search, because he's been in public service for over 40 years. But still, I'm going to go and get more dirt on Joe Biden. And then they kind of, and then the Trump administration goes, that's really a bad timing thing with this whole Russia stuff. You know, don't really think you should do that. He goes, all right, fine, I'm not going to go. Suddenly he tells the Washington Post and other news outlets, oh yeah, hey, I hosted a meeting with Ukrainian ambassadors and government officials to talk about what the Democrats did in 2016. And the guy says, I forget the gentleman's name, Andriy Tezhenko. Let's just pardon my
Tezhenko.
I like that.
Okay. Kazoon time.
And trying to find incriminating information on Paul Manafort. And he says, yes, the Democrats used us for this. And so you're like, okay, so what's the big deal? You know, the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, has denied this, saying we never did this. It's not, no, we didn't do that at all. And really what it comes down to is the fact that there was a big investigation dealing with the collusion that the Trump campaign did with the Russian government and the whole Mueller investigation. And now what could really propel this and why this is such a big deal, why this could amplify everything, is what happened last week with the president declassifying as much intelligent information as possible to Attorney General Barr. And you might say, okay, what's the big deal about that? Well, Barr has come out and has been just a big sympathizer, supporter, protector, insert this type of phrase, whatever you want, to President Trump. And so now he's going to look into all the investigations, look into the CIA, look into the FBI, look in all these types of intelligence communities and see, well, what happened? And you know, investigate the investigators, as Trump likes to say. You know, and okay, all right. So we've got X and Y connected here. Why, you know, what's it have to do with Z? Well, as we've stated here, we got Barr, who's protecting the president. He now has access to all of this information. He could possibly try to politicize the intelligence community and back up the president's claim that this whole Russia investigation was not any type of intelligence gathering or any type of fact-finding mission. It was simply politics. And this has gotten a lot of former intelligence community people, even the head of the intelligence community, Dan Coats, rather concerned about this. And politicizing the intelligence community is not exactly a good idea. Now, we unraveled a lot here, so, and it really does stem from Giuliani's meeting with the Ukrainian ambassadors and diplomats.
Yeah, because I just want to kind of take a deep breath there, Drew.
Yeah.
I kind of want to just like dissect this a piece at a time, because first things first, Giuliani, and we'll talk about Barr in just a sec, but Giuliani from the onset has told people time and time and time and time again, if I can muddy the waters with the American public, I can make all the troubles against Donald Trump disappear, because at the end of the day, the United States government, the jury of that government is its people. How successful, up until the Ukrainian maneuver, has Giuliani been in enacting that exact statement?
Well, the people are confused about it, and they've got a better hold on the narrative than the Democrats do. So right now, he hasn't been all that bad at it.
Yeah, I know. And that's just it. If you look at the polls before Giuliani started, a lot of people were for impeaching the president and, of course, allowing Mueller to finish the investigation. 5 months into Giuliani being the defense attorney for Donald Trump, the percentages changed. Now, that doesn't mean that more Americans supported keeping Donald Trump in power and not doing anything to check the power of the executive branch. No, it just means that more and more Americans were starting to see themselves as in the gray area between Russia colluded and Trump did not. Now, that's just kind of a weird thing about Giuliani, is as nonsensical as he seems to sensible people like me and you, his strategy does seem to have a payoff.
Yeah, it does. It's working out to be that way for him, is just to try to, you know, to unclear the dots that have been connected, and just to try to say, you know, this is nothing more than a sham. And it kind of also saying, well, we didn't collude, but we didn't do anything different than what the Democrats did. You know, they used Ukraine. And so he's trying to find somebody out there who's a Ukrainian official to back him up on this. And it looks like he's, well, according to our story here, from other press releases and press that's covered it. Yeah, he's found somebody. Yeah, sure, I'll say whatever you want. And that's kind of what he's looking for.
Yeah, because see, this is the thing. Now he's hoping that he can persuade the Ukrainian government to also do that same thing. Please dance, monkey, dance, as I grind the organ and tell the American people why they shouldn't like Joe Biden. Well, yeah. Like you said earlier, there's plenty of reasons not to like Joe Biden. As a matter of fact, Google the words Joe Biden mullet. That's all you really need.
That may spur people to like Joe Biden. Who knows?
No. Okay. There's only two things in this country that we accept. One, that Joe Biden is just not really that likable on his own. And two, mullets will only look good on Kid Rock because Kid Rock is the ambassador of white trailer trash in the United States. And as such, that is an official ambassadorial look. That is the only two things I'll agree to on this show.
He's drawing a very firm line here. I'm not crossing it. I'll back away.
Thank you. Because as long as we're talking about evil, evil mullets, this dead, smelly fish that Giuliani's strategy currently consists of involves getting foreign diplomats to play along with him. And as such, the Ukrainian diplomats basically came forward in a statement over this weekend and said, you know, we're not going to play ball with you Americans if that's how you're going to act. Mm-hmm. Now, keep in mind, this weekend was a very austere weekend with the Brexit leading to the resignation of Prime Minister Theresa May, which means that it could be Boris Johnson as the next prime minister, which Boris Johnson is just kind of Trump-esque with more weight and less dignity. With that said, our appeal across Europe is very, very delicate and important at this time. So with a maneuver like Giuliani kind of bypassing the State Department now and saying that he's going to go to foreign government to help these people shore up our United States president, the rest of the diplomatic future of 2019 going into 2020 is through what would be the perfect word for a political train wreck that could also be an explosion, that could also be an implosion, that could lead to a collapse of world economy.
I don't have a word for that except for, well, no, I don't have a word for that, but that's, yeah, that's, yeah, you hit the nail on the head. There's no other better way to really describe that. Let's also not forget that while the president was on his way to Japan for another state visit, his friend, our not-so-friend, Chairman Kim Jong-un, decides that he's going to do a missile test, and that is going to actually violate the entire UN agreements and the agreements that we've made with him on this thing. Mm-hmm. When John Bolton, who I admire his mustache, says that this is a bad thing, John Bolton, okay, who is more right than Trump could be on a lot of things. And right, I mean, on the political conservative right.
Yeah. John Bolton looks at fascism and says, meh, I could do better.
Yes, that's exactly right. Says that, yeah, that's not good. And then Trump, the president, sends out a tweet saying, people are upset. A lot of my people are upset. Not a big deal. You're going, wait a minute here. And even the Japanese who share this side of the world with North Korea get ever so ticked off whenever this happens. You know, he's kind of made his own friends here. you know, I want to do a trade deal with the Japanese. They'll like whatever I tell them, but I gotta love Chairman Kim Jong-un. Gotta love him. Yeah. Gotta love the Ukrainians. Gotta love Putin and Boris Johnson. Gotta love him too. You know, he's making his own friends out here that are not exactly who have the best interest for us and our place in this world. And you know, that's incredibly scary, because you know, for many reasons that we've discussed on this show.
Yeah, because I'm just going to go ahead and be honest. Look, if you're going to try to pick UK friends right now to combat the Ukrainian thing, one, everybody that you've mentioned is checked out of that debate. Yep. They do not want any part of the United States and Ukraine's shenanigans. They do not want any of Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani's shenanigans. As a matter of fact, they're actually kind of concerned because Donald Trump will be coming to the UK in an official visit very soon, and their own politicians have been enduring a little bit of a public protest, including people that align themselves politically with Donald Trump's thought. Let's take, for example, leader of UKIP now, Nigel Farage. He was the architect of the Brexit vote. Nigel Farage has not had a single week of not wearing someone's milkshake since the Brexit talks broke down. And that includes everybody from Jacob Rees-Mogg, who was also kind of in the running to replace Theresa May. Jacob Rees-Mogg, get this, Jacob Rees-Mogg says that he is the type of man, and get it, he has 6 children, by the way. He does not take off his jacket until he gets to his bedroom. That is an actual statement from a guy that could have been the prime minister of the United Kingdom. Once again, 6 kids, but doesn't take his jacket off. So I wonder what's under that jacket. Anyway, moving on.
Well, let's also not forget here that you know, not every part of the UK is wild about Trump. That's never been a big secret, especially those in Scotland. Whenever he was trying to build his golf course out there, sued him over the wind turbines that were in the water, not even close to his course, saying how ugly they are. Even got really, really mean with the Scottish former government, and even with UK judges over this issue. So I'm not surprised that people are just kind of like, I don't really want to be around them. But you know, I'm all about, you know, America's interests and trying to, you know, help ourselves and make good allies. But I don't think Trump is really the one
to carry this out.
Really.
Yeah.
Last 2.5 years, going on 3 here, of his presidency. But, you know, as you were mentioning, a lot of our allies aren't really going to have it with this whole, you know, Ukrainian stuff. And no one's going to let him know better than Angela Merkel, who's the chancellor of Germany. And she has no problem standing up to him. And we're finding that a lot of women leaders have no problem standing up to him, and even getting into our own leadership here in America with Nancy Pelosi. So, you know, not a lot of issue women have saying, no, step back, not dealing with your crap, get out of here. Whereas a lot of other leaders are a bit timid of that, and that's a bit interesting. I don't know what to really take of that, but I've found that the best word that I could say is that's a bit of an interesting moment.
Yeah, because, I mean, Nancy Pelosi has continued her evolution into a woman that could possibly be sitting courtside at a cotillion with her prayers and bless his hearts, and somebody needs to form an intervention on that Donald Trump. Now,
yes.
We have a lay in a hand. But this is the thing that I want to say before we get into our last story. Drew, will this work?
I don't think it'll work. No. Not at all.
Okay.
Excuse me. I apologize. I was taking a breath there. No, it won't work because, look, we mentioned here how, you know, the aim was to try to get more dirt on the Democrats, try to, you know, strengthen his particular ties with particular people in different parts of the Eastern Europe, how that's backfiring in with our other allies, how the person they're trying to get information on has been in public service for over 40 years, 45 years. It's not that difficult to find this type of information. So it's all trying to just muddle the message on Russia and Mueller and all that sort of stuff. That's really not hard to do. You don't need to find more information to say, ha ha, oh, they did it too. That's a really playground tactic. And that's just simply not going to work.
Well, you know, this is the thing. This administration seems to very much invest itself in loving strategies that do not work. Let's talk about William Barr, shall we?
Yeah, let's get there.
Okay, because this is the thing. William Barr has, from the onset, shown that he was the type of attorney general that Jeff Sessions, well, was supposed to be. The right. Ray Cohn, as Donald Trump called him. Now, on one hand, Ray Cohn was the most evil person that ever walked the earth. On the other hand, he did keep Studio 54 open, so... Okay,
it's true.
It's like watching the Dark Phoenix. You're sympathetic, but also they must die. The thing is when it comes to William Barr, has he went full Roy Cohn?
He's getting there. He's getting there. Not yet. We'll see what he turns out in this declassification of all the information given to him. He's going to have carte blanche all over this, and we'll see what he will do. Now, past actions are a pretty good indicator of future actions. He's been a defender of the president. He's stated that there was some sort of spying going on the Trump campaign in 2016. That's kind of been known because of the weird actions that were taking. It wasn't spying. He was being monitored, but I thought that was public knowledge, but I guess it wasn't. Anyway, look, the thing that we have to really get here is that you're exactly right, is that he was the guy that Sessions was supposed to be, and he wasn't. And Sessions wasn't. Now he's got Barr, and he's got a guy who's going to take it to the streets with him. He's going to, you know, really go after all the people who's coming after him. And we'll see if his defense is political or actually fact-finding. This has gotten a lot of the intelligence community rather concerned because this is something that doesn't really happen. There's a procedure that has long been held, that has gone through Congress and has gone through the Department of the Intelligence community head with Dan Coats. There's a procedure here, and the president seems to bypass that and just say, look, AG Barr is going to handle it all, and we'll just see if he's going to back up Trump on this. I have a good feeling that he is, but once we see what actually happens, we'll be able to really be a good judgment of what that is. But my gut feeling is, yeah, he's going to go full Ray Cohn. He's going to be, this was all political, chicanery. This is, that's my initial gut, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, because this is the thing. If we're following the timelines here of Watergate and Trump together, we notice that we are well past the Saturday Night Massacre, and this is the problem with that. The Saturday Night Massacre is what started to trigger the impeachment process. Now, we are full-blown past Saturday Night Massacre through the looking glass where the Attorney General is weaponizing a report to go after the president's political enemies. How much longer are Dems going to be happy with this before they finally say enough is enough, impeach?
You know, that's a great question. They're looking at this in a different lens. They're not looking at this as part of love of country and patriotism and all that. They're looking at this through a political landscape. How much, can we win the narrative of the American people to say we need to investigate and then go into impeachment proceedings? how far can, you know, how far will that work for us for 2020? They're looking at this in an entirely different lens. They're not saying, you know what, this is, you know, forget the election. Let's just go after it and we'll see what happens. They're not doing that. They're thinking, you know, where's the American public right now? And, you know, can we still hold on to the House? Can we take hold of the Senate? Can we even win the 2020 presidential election? That's their mindset. And that hasn't always been the best kind of mindset to really go with. Well, you know, what Republicans do is they do something and then tell you that you will like it because of this. Democrats are saying, I don't know if that's a good idea right now, and they appear a bit to be a bit weak. So I don't know if that really answers your question all that much, but until the political landscape has an appetite for this, they're not really going to go after it. I mean, that's why you're seeing Speaker Pelosi saying, maybe, you know, they're just kind of taking baby steps towards this and slowly coming across as, you know, now she's saying cover up. Now she's saying these types of words. Maybe that is part of her larger plan, is to have an impeachment holding by the end of the year. But it's going to be a rather slow thing to try to get the American people ready for it. I don't know. That's my best guess. That's my initial feeling on that.
Well, I mean, Pelosi has always shown herself to be a strategician. I mean, let's just be honest. The woman has had some very tumultuous times as Speaker of the House and leader of the Democratic Party up on the Hill. However, this is one thing that I think that you might be on to, because I had kind of envisioned what Nancy Pelosi is really doing is telling everybody, let's go through the course of the investigation, because look at what we're doing. Donald Trump has had multiple losses in the judicial branch for trying to stall our investigations. In other words, it is worse for his reputation if we don't sidetrack all of this stuff and we let him destroy his reputation slowly. As a matter of fact, in my mind, Pelosi's strategy would actually be wait until after Congress reconvenes in January, then start the proceedings towards impeachment articles so that you're in them by March and you stunt any GOP momentum by June.
That's an interesting thought. That's definitely an interesting thought process. What Democrats, what their ultimate fear is that if you remember back to 1998, after the midterm election, that made Bill Clinton one of the most popular presidents we've had in the 20th century. And Democrats don't want Donald Trump to be Bill Clinton. And, you know, we can talk about records and all that stuff and comparing the two and all this and that. And that's, you know, always up for conversation because they held the same office. But they don't want to have that type of punishment on Election Day in 2020. And so they're ever so mindful of saying, you know what, I don't know. This is going to have to be slow. We're going to have to do this in a methodical manner. My initial feeling is if it's not going to be done in 2019, the only impeachment that's going to happen in 2020 is in November.
Wow.
And that's the election.
Yep.
So that's my gut feeling. I could be way off.
Yeah. And ladies and gentlemen, we've spilled our guts for another show. Till the next one. Love you, mean it. Gate in, bye.